Hey, Al McCoy here, and you are listening to the Solar Panel, the Phoenix Suns show.
So we want to hear from you on how you became a Suns fan. So head on over to our Facebook at Suns Solar Panel. Leave a comment at the top post. Let us know how you became a Suns fan. Each week we're going to read one off. This one comes from Robert Hummer, who said he grew up in Phoenix and went to the Madhouse on McDowell with my dad and had the greatest time. It was 1988. Every year after that, I got to go to a few games, but I just remember listening to the games. Good old Al McCoy calling out Shazam and hanging out with my dad. I've never had another favorite team.
Yep, that's how I grew up. Watching on TV or listening on the radio with my dad.
Yep, same here. The radio was a big experience. I've talked about that where we were too cheap to have the cable, so I would listen to the home games on a little black Emerson radio in my room, and Al McCoy was basically my window to this team, and that's why to this day I have the utmost respect for Mr. McCoy.
Yeah, they were on Channel 9, local Channel 9 for years until they got good enough to have to put themselves on cable and all that. But they were on. I loved it. I watched them on Channel 9. It was simulcast with Al. Calling the game on the radio as well as being the TV guy, and then they actually got themselves on cable and got different hosts and stuff like that. But
what city did you grow up in? It was Channel 45 here, my friend.
Oh, 45. Why am I thinking nine? It was 45. KUTP, right?
Yes, back in the day. And then it was UPN 45. No, there's not even a Channel 9 in Phoenix.
No, there was a local Channel 9. Yeah.
Were you down in
That's in Phoenix.
Channel 9 in Tucson.
No worries.
Dave can't remember anything.
I'm getting too old. First is I don't remember the Desert City 6 because I was 4 years old at the time, and then now I don't remember the channel number. Back in the 80s. Yep, I'm losing it.
We've had some listeners like killing us because we didn't remember the Desert City 6.
Yeah.
Jesus. Let me make it very clear. I was, when they were playing, I was -9 years old. So there's a good reason I don't remember that.
Because nothing ever happened before Greg was born.
No, but how do you have a memory if you weren't there? Like, you can't. Like, that's the problem here. I know of the band. I just didn't know they were named the Desert City Six. Hey, I'll tell you this. We're probably the only podcast that would even acknowledge the Desert City Six of the 500 Suns podcast. So we have that going for us.
Hey, we're also the only Suns podcast that would talk about the Desert City Six 3 weeks in a row.
Wouldn't that be so cool if there are listeners? We could do an interview.
I'm guessing they're in their 80s or 90s at this point.
Yeah, well, this is the new radio. Podcast is the new radio, so maybe they are listening.
Which, by the way, we are on Spotify now. So if you haven't had a chance to check us out on Spotify, you can listen to us there. So you're listening to the Solar Panel, Phoenix Sun Show. You can find us on all things social media. Just search at Sun Solar Panel on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. You can follow us individually on Twitter as well. Myself, Tim Tompkins at Radio Tim NBA, Greg Esposito at Espo, and Dave King at Dave King NBA. Don't forget about Brightside Night, January 8th. I hear that Dave King has a giant campaign for Giving Tuesday set up for Brightside Night.
Yeah, it's where I'm going to tweet out, hey, donate on Giving Tuesday. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. I also did the Everybody Donate on Thanksgiving. And while we got a lot of donations, and I really, really appreciate it, we're well over 500 tickets now, but we have a long, long way to go for Brightside Night. Please find the link on the website, find the link on my profile on Twitter and Brightside's profile on Twitter as well, and donate. This is sending kids to an NBA game. Don't get all hoity-toity with me and saying, I don't want to watch the Suns. Kids don't care about what game they're watching. They just want to have the NBA experience. So buy some tickets, send some kids to the game, and you might even get something out of it for yourself.
Think about that. $9 and you can have a positive impact in this world. I mean, think about what you usually spend $9 on and the little to no impact that usually has. This could actually really change, change something for a kid. I mean, it could wind up creating a lifelong fan. It could be one of those moments that helps a kid who's having a tough time realize that there's people out there that care. Just take a chance on $9 and see what you can do in this world.
So I did a bit of research, and I posted this up on our Facebook, and I asked some of the listeners, but I want to get your guys' opinions. And the question was, do the Suns need to change their scheme in close game situations? Right now, the Suns are 2-3. They were 1-3 at the time of posting this. This was before the Bucks win. So games within 5 points and 3 minutes remaining, so clutch time, if you will. Devin Booker has a 72% usage rate and takes 62% of the shots. Before the Bucks game, this was 87% usage rate and 84% of the shots. He's shooting 38% during that time and 16% from three. That's on 2.6 attempts per game. TJ Warren is the next closest player with a half an attempt per game during the final stretch of 3 minutes in Suns games. Ayton has zero shot attempts. Mikal Bridges has 0.3. And now Jamal Crawford, after the Bucks game, has one.
Hey, let's be honest. They were trying to get Devin Booker that shot.
They were clutch desperately. Played
better defense than he did the entire time. That play, Jamal Crawford shooting was never part of that play. If you go back and look, they were desperately trying to get Devin Booker that ball and could not. So that trend was going to continue if Eric Bledsoe didn't completely shut Devin Booker down on that play.
Igor
wanted the ball
clearly,
there.
Yeah, Igor clearly needs to get better in end of game situations. Right now, they're obviously the team is a one trick pony. Devin Booker is a one trick pony taking the shots. He seems to be in the point book experiment this past couple of weeks. He's really good the first three quarters on generating assists and getting his team involved and looking outside himself. And then once the fourth quarter happens, I mean, Friday night against the Bucks, he took 11 shots and he was guarded like a blanket. None of those shots. Well, one of those was open because his defender fell down and he missed the shot. But the rest of them was heavily guarded. And he should just realize that gives him a chance. There's other guys who are open then. Guys need to move. Guys were sticking in their spots. Their feet were glued to the ground. And the only reason Jamal Crawford got the shot in the final seconds is because he started out with the ball. So otherwise, he never would have gotten the ball. Booker would have dribbled himself into a contested fall away at 20 feet. And one time that won a game. And so he's going to keep trying that. So I think Booker is the problem. One of the problems with Point Book is he does get tunnel vision toward the end and he wants to take all the shots because he is the best player on the team. But you've got to get other people involved, and that's an evolution that's got to happen. But wow, those numbers are incredible, Tim. I can't believe how extreme the usage rate is in close games in final minutes. That's incredible.
And to me, that speaks to lack of trust. Because if Booker does not trust the other guys on the court, he's going to default to, I know I trust in myself. I know I have the most skills on this team, and I'm going to try to carry this team, especially if he's playing point guard in these situations where he's just going to default to that. And I don't blame him. Outside of what TJ Warren's done so far this year, who are you going to trust out there in those final minutes? They probably should trust DeAndre Ayton more.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Down low and get some easy buckets. But I can not trust a rookie yet in those situations, but at some point you're gonna have to put faith in him and get the ball there
too. Well, the thing is with Ayton is he doesn't demand the ball. He doesn't force himself open. He doesn't seal off his guy well enough in the closing minutes to be trusted to be able to catch the ball, and then the other teams suck in like crazy on him. One's fronting and one's coming in behind. Where he goes up to catch the lob that the Suns invariably send this you know wet noodle lob toward him. There's three guys trying to deflect the ball, so I can see why in crunch time there's a little bit of a reticence to try to lob that ball in like that to him. But they've got to come up with a play, because once Ayton does get the ball in his hands, he does know what to do with it. He either does pass out to an open guy because three guys have sucked in on him, Or he turns around because he's got a smaller guy on him and he scores. He's got a really good touch around the rim. So, yes, the Suns need to figure out ways to get the ball more to Aiden in crunch time, but Aiden has to figure out ways to get himself more available to receive a pass.
To be clear, Aiden has zero shot attempts in the final 3 minutes of games so far this season, with games within 5 points anyway.
And I think that's wrong because if you watch him on offense, he does do decisive good things with the ball. He very rarely just gives up on the play and lobs it back out to his guy at midcourt. He makes good decisions. It's just that in the final minutes, nobody trusts him because he's 20 years old. And he also doesn't show enough emotion. You know, I can see how people would forget about him almost in those clutch times because he's such a steady flame.
To me, you don't need to have a lot of emotion. You just need to be efficient. If you can get them the ball and they can get to the free throw line in these final 3 minutes in close games too, that'd be huge. And that's what a big guy like that is supposed to be able to do. If you can get him the ball down there, they're likely going to foul him if he's got a good look to try to keep him from getting an easy bucket. These are the kind of things that this team needs to do. And part of it is that trust that we're talking about with Booker. Part of it is Igor isn't drawing up plays to get Aiden the ball. But it's got to be a more even distribution if they hope to have a better chance in these close games of winning. Because as much as I love Devin Booker, as much as I think he's got that quote-unquote clutch gene, I don't think he can do it by himself, and we're seeing that, and we've seen it the last few years that he needs a running mate or two. And I think TJ Warren and DeAndre Ayton are the guys that are emerging as the people that they should be sharing the ball with in those final minutes.
Well, that was interesting on Friday night. So I got a couple of points here I want to make. First was interesting on Friday night that the Suns came up completely cold when Booker tried to tunnel vision against the Bucks, and as the Bucks were going on that 14-0 run, several of those possessions ended with a bad Booker shot or a Booker turnover.
Booker wasn't on the court for 11 of those 14 points. You're talking about at the end of the third?
I'm talking about the 14-0 run in the middle of the fourth. Booker played the whole fourth quarter.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the 11-0 run that the Bucks ended on.
No, that was the 11-0 run. Yeah, he wasn't out there for that. Was the backups. That was Crawford and Kanan. But
God, that was
lineup. Booker was out there the whole fourth quarter in that 14-0 run. He had at least two turnovers and three bad shots. He was 3 for 11 in the fourth. Booker was. And nobody else took more than I think four shots in the fourth, and Crawford had went 3 of 4. But I guess what I'm saying is that those numbers bore themselves out on Friday night against the Bucks until TJ Warren got Trevor Ariza first got a broken play three. Guess what? Off of an Aiden pass, because Aiden did make a good pass into the corner as the Suns finally did get the ball into Aiden in that fourth, and then Ariza made the three in the corner with nobody on him because they all sucked in on Aiden. And then TJ Warren in the open court got his three-point play, and so they got those 6 points to tie it up before the Crawford thing. So, yes, Booker needs to trust his teammates more, and his teammates need to make more plays when they do touch the ball, which they finally did. I think the Suns are going to figure it out. I think Igor is going to figure it out. What I thought was really interesting is that one of the things that Igor's kind of bad at is subbing for offense and defense, especially in dead ball situations in clutch time. As we all saw against the Celtics, he left Kanan and Booker out there for that final possession when he never should have. And then last night, Jamal Crawford literally subbed himself out before that final possession where the Bucks, Ayton got lucky on Antetokounmpo, but Crawford literally subbed himself out and then got himself subbed back in for that game winner. So that was really well done, finally, on an end-of-game rotation change. Now, I thought that was hilarious that Crawford had to go and tell the coaches to take himself out of the game for that possession and put Bridges back in.
Let's be honest. If Middleton had any sense of timing, the Suns don't win that game. They weren't exactly guarding him real well. He had that shot if he had gotten it off in time.
It forced him to double clutch. It's all about how you say it, Greg.
Yes. I can spin it. I know. I did it for 5 years. I just don't feel like it right.
It was incredibly tight defense to force him to double clutch and run out the clock. before letting it go.
Yeah, that's what it was. Okay, Dave, we'll roll with that.
So the free throw disparity. All right. So the Suns are 29th and getting to the line in attempts per game at 20.1. They are 24th in fouling opponents getting to the line. Opponents are averaging 26.8. Some of these have seemed a little bit ticky tack, but I hate to be like, oh, the damn refs. But it does seem more
and Ann Myers Drysdale, who refuses to, I don't think she blames the refs very often at all, and she couldn't contain herself in Friday night's game against the Bucks.
She gonna get fined for that?
I don't know, but she could not contain herself, man. I hate blaming the refs, but I guess I am right now.
Well, it was the same ref on Friday night that was also the same ref for the Sixers game, right?
Yeah.
So, you know,
Rookie. It's only his first few NBA games ever.
Yeah. Poor guy. Dude, being a ref would be so hard.
14-0 run, he called two techs. The Bucks got 2 points off of technicals from Suns complaining about foul calls.
From the bench, right?
Yeah. One was from the bench and one was Booker.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Booker. Don't want to give up points.
To your free throw point, I mean, DeAndre Ayton needs to get to the line more. And part of that is, as we talked about, he's not getting the ball later in games. Even Devin Booker, I mean, needs to get to the free throw line more. This is all about aggressiveness and putting your, you know, putting yourself in a position to create fouls by the opponents. And this team is just not good at that.
A list of Suns players' free throw attempt rate. Who would you guys guess has the best free throw attempt rate of a player that is currently on the team?
Josh Jackson.
No, he is fifth or fourth. Anyway, Dave.
Rashawn Holmes.
Yep, 34.5%.
Yeah, I figured it was one of those two because Josh Jackson's as wild as he can be at times, is aggressive, will drive the lane, will try to get to the hoop. That's how you draw fouls. And Rashawn Holmes isn't afraid to bang down low, and that's another way.
It's about arms and wild motion and stuff like that to create separation.
You can now play the Solar Panel hands-free. Just say to your Amazon smart speaker, Alexa, play podcast Sun Solar Panel. Who knew Alexa was good for more than just setting kitchen timers?
It's not surprising to me that DeAndre Ayton is viewed as not a great defensive player. When you're playing in a team that doesn't play good defense overall and around a lot of guys that are pretty bad at defense, it's going to magnify the flaws that DeAndre Ayton has. And Tim and I even talked about this on last episode, that even the defensive scheme leaves things to be desired. So at that point, of course, you're going to notice that DeAndre Ayton isn't very good defensively at times. And I think that'll come as the season progresses. But what's really driving me nuts here locally is there's two major rookies playing right now in Arizona sports. It's DeAndre Ayton, it's Josh Rosen, right? And forgive me, this is going to be a little bit of a rant. But Josh Rosen, everybody wants to blow smoke up this guy's backside. Everybody wants to talk about how he's the next great thing and he's amazing and he has not played that well. Like, I have not been overly impressed with Josh Rosen, yet the local media wants to act like he's the savior. DeAndre Ayton is playing and playing well offensively, getting double-doubles, and they want to act like this guy is not very good somehow, and it's driving me insane. And they cite, well, he doesn't have the aggressiveness. I don't care about that aggressiveness, quote-unquote. It doesn't have to be visual. This guy is playing dominant at times offensively, doing well on the glass. And yes, we know the defense leaves something to be desired. But this guy is showing more promise than any Suns rookie since Amari, and maybe even more than Amari that rookie season at times. He's the best center that the Suns have ever had at this point in his career when you're looking at it. And you're going, if you can project what he's doing beyond season one and look at it, there's a good chance he'll be the best center ever in Suns history. To Dave's point, he's making an impact by drawing in defenses. He's good enough to make the right pass and get his teammates involved. Like, I don't get how there's not more respect for DeAndre Ayton and what he's doing. It's focusing on these like little things right now with DeAndre Ayton, and it's driving me nuts. Give this guy some respect for what he's been able to accomplish in 18 games so far. Where, you know, you look at Josh Rosen again, and I have not seen that much. I know this isn't a football show, but we haven't seen that much out of Josh Rosen. Everybody thinks he's the savior. You see very encouraging things out of DeAndre Ayton, and it's nitpick. And I don't know if that just simply comes with being the number one pick overall or what, but man, it's starting to drive me nuts.
People react to intensity and spirit, and DeAndre Ayton has not a low flame, because he is one of the most productive rookies out there. He's one of the best rookies the Suns have ever had, but he's got a medium flame. He's got a steady flame. And he doesn't fly all over the court and dive and do all that, you know, screaming at the crowd and stuff like that. So he definitely, that's where people lose a little bit of love for him, is because he's not a guy you fall in love with. He's always been the most athletic, the biggest guy that everything's come easy for him. And standard sports fans don't love that kind of player. They love the underdog.
Yeah, but okay. David Robinson, Hakeem Olajuwon, those weren't high flame guys. Those were medium flame guys. The guys that just went out there.
We also
and
didn't
what
have social media back
did it
then.
Well.
David Robinson would have had a lot more local fan detractors in his first season or two, because he also was a medium flame guy.
I mean, Tim Duncan's another medium flame guy. Like, I get it. You want to somehow get fired up more as a fan by a guy, but geez, I mean, you would think this guy was playing at a so-so level. Like, he was playing as if he was the 20th best rookie in this class, rather than one probably the best so far out of this rookie class. You could probably make an argument for Trey Young. Yeah,
you could make an argument for a guy that you don't like to be mentioned on this podcast as well.
Look.
Luka Doncic has like an almost minus 10 net rating, but his team has won more games for sure because their bench has been really good. And he is putting up some stats, although DeAndre Ayton almost has more assists than he does.
But, Luka Doncic is first in the rookie class for scoring, second in assists, I believe.
First in minutes.
And third in rebounds. He's been good. I mean, I realize that you guys don't like Luka Doncic, but he's been good. There's this rookie class overall has been great.
I do not like Luka Doncic.
This rookie class has been much better than I thought it was going to be.
The debate. Okay, look, I don't mind. Look, Luka Doncic and DeAndre Ayton are both going to be very good players in this league. And I think they're going to be guys that we're going to consistently have that debate throughout the years, because they're both good enough to have long, successful careers in this league. And that's perfectly fine with me. My point was, DeAndre Ayton's been one of the best, okay? He's in that top two, top three in rookies. It's not as if he's come out and shown poorly and other guys have played immensely well. And there's a reason to just be like, well, this guy is just totally, we screwed the pooch with this guy. Even in a 4-14 start, in an abysmal looking both on offense and defense for this team, DeAndre Ayton has been a consistent force for them. He has not wavered. There's been very few games that you haven't gotten 17-8 or 17-7 out of this guy. He's consistent and he's played well. So there's no reason to panic about this guy or freak out about this guy in any way. And I get it. People are going to be like, well, you're allowed to critique guys if you see things. I understand, but we also need to realize that the Suns have a very, very special, very good player here, and just because he's not screaming at people on the court doesn't mean that he's not going to be successful and be a star long term with this team. He's not Dragan Bender. He's not Marquise Chris.
I don't dislike Luka Doncic. Believe me, please. Luka Doncic is a great young player. I just don't want us to be the fourth local Phoenix Luka Doncic fan pod. There's already enough of them out there. Tim, if you want to join those pods, you're welcome to.
No, I like you guys. I like you guys.
Hey,
I don't want to join them.
Somebody said, hey, you can get Luka Doncic in a deal to add him to Booker and Ayton. I'd be the first one to sign the damn petition for it, all right? It's not that I don't like Luka Doncic. I just thought DeAndre Ayton was the right pick and just got sick of, even after the draft, people just trying to still stand for Doncic. All right. That was my only issue. I never thought that Luka Doncic was going to be a bad player in this league or a bust or anything like that. I just think, and still think right now, that DeAndre Ayton was the right pick and is going to be as good, if not better, than Luka Doncic. All right. That's my only
point. And I also think that the arguments are different. I mean, me with Doncic, I still want to talk about him. Other people with Ayton who love Doncic, like, nitpick all day long about Ayton. Why not just appreciate both players? Or just don't talk about somebody if you don't want to. It's just crazy, all the nitpicking that DeAndre Ayton gets. I mean, the guy is pretty damn good.
Because I think a lot of the nitpicking just comes with being the number one overall pick. I think whenever you are the number one overall pick, the expectations are higher.
He was being nitpicked before he was picked number one.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. But I'm talking about, like, from the fan base specifically. I think that the expectations when you are the number one pick are just always going to stay with you, you know, rightfully or wrongfully. I mean, but hey, at least we didn't get a Markelle Fultz, right?
Let's be honest.
Or another Josh Jackson, or another Marquise Chris, or Dragan Bender.
Hey, Josh Jackson last year, his box plus minus was a negative 4.3. This year, his box plus minus is a negative 7.2.
Hey, he's progressing just in the wrong direction. Wonderful.
Oh, and by the way, am I the only one? Let's talk about the games this week a little bit. Am I the only one who thought Wendell Carter Jr. was like half the size I thought he was? Like, again, in that Bulls game, the dude looks like a small forward size-wise. I don't know.
Yeah, he was smaller than I thought.
He was about 8 in size, but he is nowhere close to that.
No.
Yeah, not exactly the imposing force that – yeah, that's what happens when you don't watch a lot of college basketball, which I don't think any of us really do. And then you hear these stats and stuff going in to it, and you get this picture in your mind of how this guy's gonna look. And yeah, Wendell Carter Jr. not exactly the imposing force that I had somehow pictured.
He's definitely been effective, and he could be a very good defensive player and all that. It's just I was just struck by his size. That's all.
You guys want to do solar opposites?
Yes.
All right. Let me pull up the timer. Because I don't want Tim to freak out that we're not timing this correctly.
That's
right.
A minute each direction, and then 30-second rebuttals.
Dave, unlike you, I remember how this segment works. So
I'll never forget it again. That's for sure.
Let's do this, gentlemen. It's time for Solar Opposites, where we take opposing views on the same topics. First quote: will playing point guard wear down Booker anymore than playing shooting guard? Dave, we're going to start with you. 1 minute is on the clock. Go.
I personally think it's going to wear him down because he's getting bodied the entire time he's got the ball in his hand. And the more he's got the ball in his hand and dribbling it and trying to create shots, the more worn down Booker's going to get. So whether he's he's on the floor without a point guard or with a point guard, as long as Devin Booker is the primary ball handler, like Tim was already talking earlier in the pod, Booker leads the team and is one of the top five guys in the league in usage rates, I'm pretty sure. And then you get into the fourth quarter and he's, what did you say, 75, 80% usage rate? It's crazy. And if you let him start out every play, it's going to end in every play with him taking a contested shot. So, and that he's got guys all over him embodying him up and all that. That's why I think he's going to wear down. I really don't think Devin Booker as your point guard is going to last as long as Devin Booker is your shooting guard. It's just not going to happen, and Booker's going to end up playing 50 games again this year.
Time's up. Time is up. Tim, if you want to just edit in your argument from last episode here, that's fine, but I will let you have your minute starting now.
to Dave's point, when it comes to usage rate down the stretch in games, I mean, usually your team's best player, if you're talking about the Raptors, for example, with Kawhi Leonard, or you're talking about the Boston Celtics with Kyrie Irving, when games are within 5 points, the best player tends to have the ball in his hands. And in those situations, even Kawhi Leonard is the one bringing up the ball. So I just don't think that the late game usage rate is a very viable argument for somebody. And it, as far as, you know, putting more wear and tear on his body because he's the one that's dribbling the ball, just look at the last play of the...
It's not the dribble.
Hey, my minute.
Hey, I'll give you an additional 5 seconds. Go ahead.
If you look at the last play of the game against the Bucks, when Devin Booker didn't have the ball, he was getting bodied just as much. So whether or not he's having to run around screens, guarding shooting guards, like, that is going to take multiple hits on your body, the same as it will if you're the point guard. And if you want to talk about mentally that putting wear and tear on your body, fine. But physically, it just simply does not put any more wear and tear on your body to be the one with the ball in your hand.
I can't believe you didn't go all the way. Yeah, I got 30 seconds here. I can't believe you didn't go all the way to calling me the dumbest, having the dumbest take on the internet like you did the other day, Tim. So I commend you for holding, keeping some restraint there, but it is not the dumbest take. Yes, he would have to run through screens and all that, as the shooting guard running around and all that. That's true. But I just think the wear and tear of the pressure mentally as well as physically, it's just going to wear him down too much.
Tim? It's time for your 30-second response.
As far as if you want to talk about mentally what it does to Devin Booker to have the ball in his hands, like, that part I simply don't agree with you on. You could say it's a thinking position, and so it requires more mentally, and that's going to wear him down mentally. But I think that Devin Booker, if you look at him, he enjoys having the ball in his hands. I do not think, though, that having Point Book is the answer long-term for this team, but simply saying that because he's playing point guard rather than shooting guard is going to put more wear and tear on the body.
Time's up.
Isn't true.
All right.
He missed it. No, that isn't true. Did not make it in the cut.
I'm not counting that when I pass judgment on both of you here, which is fun to be able to do that finally. I sit here and I've heard both sides of this, and I lean towards Tim in terms of the thought process here, and we went through that on the last episode. I'm gonna have to give Tim the point, though, for a different reason. Simply because I know Dave wrote this question because he had beef with Tim about what he said last week on the last episode, and Dave wasn't man enough to just write the question about saying, "Why did you hate on me in the last episode?" by shredding my opinion on this.
I said that in my argument.
Yeah, but no, but I wanted the full question should have just been, Tim, why did you hate on me last episode? And that's what the whole debate should have been, because it was obvious
that's what you
really wanted to do.
All right.
I don't know that you would have won that argument. I just would have been more impressed with you if you'd come out and not been passive-aggressive about it. All right, next question. Could Rashawn Holmes have a bigger impact with starters than Ayton does because of his energy and effort? Tim, you get to start this one.
No. And that's because of something that Dave spoke to earlier, which is the gravitational pull of DeAndre Ayton. DeAndre Ayton, if you look at all of the best five-man lineups with the Suns, that DeAndre Ayton, or not just five-man, four-man, three-man, and two-man lineups with the Suns, DeAndre Ayton is in all of them. You know, what we've talked about earlier on this episode having to do with the lack of offensive rebounding, that's an issue. But I do think that Igor Kokoshkov, or if you're the Bucks announcer, Igor, basically that he is being used properly, and he's perfect in the second unit. He's even good in late game situations with the starting unit, because he can, if they're going to switch, Rashawn Holmes can switch out on guards, and we can be completely comfortable with that. He moves his feet well, but he would not be better in the starting lineup than DeAndre Ayton.
Time is up.
All right, so we're gonna treat this like debate club, even though I originally had that same take. But I am gonna do the opposite take, and I'm gonna see if I can win this argument. Rishon Holmes shows a ton of energy out there. He's constantly moving. He's contesting shots. He's jumping up and blocking shots as they're coming in. His help defense is very active. He gets out there. He throws. He sets picks. He throws screens and all that. He grabs rebounds. He fights for offensive rebounds. I think he'd be a marvel in that starting lineup. And then DeAndre Ayton could help buoy the second unit and be effective out there and drawing in the defenses so that the lesser offensive players in the second unit can have a little bit more success because DeAndre Ayton is using his gravitational pull, pulling defenders in at the rim. And then Josh Jackson would be in love with having DeAndre Ayton in the second unit because Josh would be able to throw lobs constantly, weak, wet noodle lobs into Ayton, and then they'd have their fill against second units, and maybe Ayton would get.
Dave, your time is up. Tim, 30-second response starts now.
The point about Josh Jackson being able to lob to Ayton is actually kind of interesting, and I don't hate that, but that's under the presumption that Igor is doing hockey lineup shifts, and that's simply not the case. I mean, most of the time, some of the starters are mixed in with the bench units, and some of the bench units are mixed in with the starters, so it's not like it's full lineup shifts when the bench is playing. But that would actually be a really interesting thing to do, and I think that Igor should try it one game to see if it works.
No, you just... Oh, I have to win this one, man, because you just switched arguments right in the middle.
I did it. So, it's interesting.
No, yeah, it's interesting. So you have to give me this point, Greg, and I'm just going to talk for the next 30 seconds about how you have to give me the point because Tim switched because I convinced him, even though I came in with the argument that Ayton was better in the starting lineup. It is possible that Rishon Holmes could have an impact, but I think overall his impact would be less effective if full-time with the starters is all. But,
I'm going to give – because this is very much like whose line is anyways, and the points don't matter at all because none of us are actually keeping track of who's winning points in this. So I'm going to give Dave the point because, yes, coming in and having the original argument that you wanted taken and then actually having a convincing argument why Rishon Holmes might actually make an interesting impact in the starting lineup, you definitely get the point. To me, I've got a thought on this. What if you played both?
No. No,
good
no.
Shifted Ayton to power forward.
No.
I don't know. Tim, no, he was pretty successful in college at power forward. I'm just saying, you've got these lineups that can't rebound, right? You're not having effectiveness. Maybe try that one game. I'm not saying it's the solution, but maybe it actually has a positive impact on your defense and your rebound.
The only kind of coach that would ever do that kind of lineup is a coach that would play Jamal Crawford and Isaiah Cannon together for serious minutes.
No, we've seen the Twin Towers. No, I just don't ever want to see Twin Towers again.
Look, I'm just saying it worked for him at U of A, and he was able to still be impactful center next to him.
If nothing else, Igor is a man of his principles. He believes in having a point guard that's not named Devin Booker out there, and he believes in DeAndre Ayton being only a center. He talked about that all summer, and DeAndre Ayton is only going to be a center in the NBA. He's got to learn that position. That's the first time at any highly competitive level that he's played center.
I think so, too. When you're looking at a flawed roster, if you're trying to get wins and you have to get creative somehow, that might not be the worst thing because it's not sustainable to have guys like TJ Warren and Mikal Bridges and Trevor Ariza, these smaller guys playing power forward and giving up the rebounding that you are, that this roster is. I'm not saying long-term DeAndre Ayton is a center, should only be a center as his main position, but you might have to get creative at some point if you want to win and not be completely abysmal this season, and that's one potential option because there's not a whole lot of options at point guard other than putting Booker there to get quote unquote creative. So the only other spot is power forward that you're going to have to get creative. And right now, Rishon Holmes is proving he deserves the minutes he's getting. Obviously, DeAndre Ayton is playing well, and outside of that Milwaukee game, nothing has really clicked for that bench. And you might have to get creative. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's a long-term solution, very much like Point Book isn't a long-term solution. But this roster is highly flawed. It does not appear that they're prepared to make any moves at this point to address any of those things, and may not until well into December or beyond if they do anything this year to address it. So maybe you just got to get creative at some point. It beats starting Rashawn Holmes, I'll tell you that much.
I'm honestly surprised.
By himself without Aiden.
I'm honestly surprised that we haven't seen any minutes of the two of them together.
I'm not. But then again, I would have said I'm not surprised to see some of those lineups, and we have seen them. So Igor's gone through about 30, 40 different lineup combinations. So it is kind of a surprise in that regard that we haven't seen the two of them together. Only three of them have played more than 40 minutes together.
Well, and let's be honest. This isn't Alex Len, Tyson Chandler playing together. These are two immensely athletic guys that would be playing together. So it's different in that standpoint, too. It's not your traditional, quote-unquote, twin towers. It's not two relatively stiff guys that can't move around. And Ayton has a jumper, too. So it's not like it's two guys that can't stretch it. Rashawn Holmes doesn't, but at least Ayton does. Not the solution, not a long-term fix, but maybe something to experiment with to see if you can fix some of those rebounding woes for stretches in the game, for sure.
Hey, it's Amino Hassan, and you're listening to the Suns Solar Panel Podcast.
We're coming up on time. Let's do three headlines from Suns Reddit. The first one, this is coming from MPSTAHL08. MPSTAHL08, I guess is how you pronounce that. And this one's funny. You can't see the picture, but I'll just have to read it for you. ESPN forgot to update their predetermined outcome. And on the bottom of the screen, it said, Phoenix, seventh straight loss versus Milwaukee.
Some intern went, hey, it's a holiday weekend. Let's just guess what's going to happen and get out of here.
Dude, he very well could have written that with a minute and a half left in the game when the Bucks had a 114-108 lead after a 14-0 run, and it looked like the Suns' spirit was broken. So he very well could have done that close to the end of the game. I don't think any of us would have written the headline that actually the game turned out as.
Honestly, if he had just been half watching too, he may have thought that Middleton shot counted and just put it up. Yep, that seems right. Let's roll with that. Oh wow!
Oops. It was thanks to the Suns' tight defense that Middleton didn't get a shot
off. Yeah. Let's keep rolling with that.
Kurt Four Peeps said, "Is Joe Prunty the head coach? He's the one talking during the timeouts while Igor is like 3 feet away." Also, okay, so the Bucks announcer got Kokoschkov right, but he didn't get Igor.
It's like somebody trained him on how to say Kokoschkov.
Right. Who says Igor?
They forgot to do the first name.
Was it in Young Frankenstein? Dave, this is a question for you because Tim is not going to know. In Young Frankenstein, didn't they refer to him as Igor? They referred to him...
Yeah,
as Dr. Frankenstein, and what didn't they call him Igor?
Frankenstein and Igor.
I think
maybe
he's just simply that, or he thinks it's like an Apple product, and it's the lowercase I, big G, like iPad, it's Igor.
He's very interactive.
Maybe that's what it is. I have no clue. It's pretty easy to get pronunciation right. They actually provide it for you in media guides. And
I think there
in
is
the daily packet. Yeah.
In the loudness of the arena and all the background music during timeouts and just the ambient noise, I would not be surprised if there is a language barrier. As far as Igor, it is. I think English is like his third or fourth language. And it is hard to understand him even in a totally quiet room. So I would not be surprised if Igor and Prunty have agreed that Prunty is going to be doing the timeout instructions. It's not that Igor is not the head coach. It's just that Prunty is the American that the players can understand better. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. I don't know for sure. We can ask. I'll certainly ask next week when the Suns are back in town. We'll see what kind of answer he gives. But I think it's going to be related to that language issue.
Does that mean Lindsey Hunter didn't speak very good English? Because Igor was running the huddles during timeouts when Lindsey Hunter was the head coach and Igor was the lead assistant. Igor was the one running all the huddles. So I don't know.
That's really
I have, to be honest, I haven't watched the huddles enough to really know the difference. Honestly, it's not. I've admittedly only been in the building for a couple games, and they don't show a whole lot of timeouts on TV. And
yeah, when I've seen the timeouts at games, I've seen Igor doing a lot of the talking. I'm not quite sure how somebody, if they in Milwaukee especially, I don't know when that question was posed on Reddit, but
yeah,
I'm not sure how often any TV coverage would have shown the Suns timeout huddle a lot. So
there were a few. He was talking a lot during them. But once the question was posed, then I had to think, did I see Igor talking during any of them? And then I couldn't remember. But there were at least a few where he wasn't.
Did Igor happen to catch a cold or something in bitter cold Milwaukee or Chicago where they've been and was having trouble with his voice? I mean, there's a million reasons that it could have been that way in Milwaukee, none of which necessarily mean Igor, which I think is where this question was going, that Igor is somehow unfit to be doing his job.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could also be that, you know, hey, it could be like when Steve Kerr had the players running the huddles against the Suns, you know, maybe they, because Joe Prunty was coming home to the Bucks, maybe they just let him run a couple huddles.
Or, I don't know. Or maybe he did have some valuable insight in the tendencies of some of these guys that he was trying to shed light on. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of, he could have been saying, hey.
He could have been instructing on what their tendencies are, yeah?
Yeah. It could have been a total thing like that where, hey, I know that Middleton tends to do this, or Antetokounmpo, if you get him in this situation, he struggles more than others. And there's a lot of reasons in that case, a guy coming from Milwaukee that knows a lot of the tendencies could have been heavily involved. So I'm not going to read too much into it, but I love that the detectives on Reddit will, so they got to have something to talk about.
So we're going to have to end the episode there. It's my fault. I'm actually...
Where's my third question?
I missed my third... I'm going to work with a shooting coach right now, and it's $40 an hour, so...
Hold on.
Wow. Yeah,
hold
good,
on. No,
good.
We are not stopping the episode. No, we're not stopping the... Tim just admitted that he plays pickup basketball, right? We're not talking. He didn't pay to join a league. He's not in
semi-pro. I do paid leagues.
Pickup basketball.
I do paid leagues too.
Okay, so you are paying some dude $40 an hour to try to teach you how to shoot, so you can play better in pickup games.
Yeah. That's some serious. That's some focus. I appreciate that. I respect that.
I get most of my. I get the majority of my points off of. Cuts. I'm a really good cutter. I have a really good like 6 or 7 foot baseline shot, but my 3-pointer just it isn't there. I don't take a lot of 3-pointers in games anyway. But if I had a 3-point shot, it would really open up my drives. So I want to get a better 3-point shot.
If you do it like TJ, take 1,000 of them.
The problem is I have a 3-year-old.
4,000 of them. Right? Hey, Tim, I know Eddie Johnson, having worked with him for years. I'm pretty sure he put out an instructional DVD. I can get you a copy of that for free and save you the $40 an hour.
No, because it comes down to not being able to watch your own shot while you're taking it. And so you have to have someone that can tell you what you're doing wrong. Now, there's a couple of things I did recently that have improved the jump shot. One is adding a dip in the shot, and that's been really productive. But a shooting coach is worth it.
I think it's worth it too.
Didn't Steve Nash just come out with an app that you can set back while you're shooting? It'll analyze it for you. Like I think he was part of that group that that just came out with it for the iPhone using their augmented reality.
Oh, well,
check that
check
out. I'm sure it's cheaper than $40 too.
Well, I'm just
trying that for my tennis swing.
But I gotta go.
Sure. All right. Good luck with your shooting, coach. Have fun shooting. Enjoy it, Tim. Make that $40 worth it.
You just got done listening to The Solar Panel. For more great Suns content, check out the Timeline podcast for stuff like this.
There's no way that Hakeem Olajuwon makes his own pancakes. I'm really sorry that you just made a great coherent point and that's all I had to respond with, but all it did was lead me to look up the fact that Hakeem Olajuwon made $110 million in his NBA career, and God knows how much since then. He easily has someone at his ranch to make his pancakes, right?
That's The Timeline, a Phoenix Suns podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.